WNYC Studios is supported by Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, where hundreds of researchers make new discoveries inspired by the work of previous Dana-Farber scientists. Learn more about their momentum at danafarber.org/everywhere.
This is The Political Scene, a weekly conversation with New Yorker writers and editors about politics. It's Thursday, October 12th. I'm Dorothy Wickenden, executive editor of The New Yorker. A year ago, The Washington Post published the infamous Access Hollywood video in which Donald Trump is caught on tape joking about sexually harassing women. He said, among other things, "And when you're a star, they let you do it. You can do anything." Since then, Roger Ailes and Bill O'Reilly have been forced to resign from Fox. Bill Cosby went on trial this summer, charged with drugging and sexually assaulting a woman. Now The New Yorker and The New York Times have published lengthy investigations into numerous charges of sexual harassment and assault by Harvey Weinstein, until recently one of Hollywood's most powerful producers. The New Yorker made public a tape that was made during a 2015 police sting in New York, in which one of the victims, Ambra Batalana Gutierrez, secretly recorded an encounter with Weinstein at the Tribeca Grand Hotel.
On everything, I'm a famous guy.
I'm feeling very uncomfortable right
please
now.
Please come in now, and 1 minute, and if you want to leave, when the guy comes with my jacket,
you can go. Why yesterday you touched my breast?
Oh, please, I'm sorry, just come on, I'm used to that.
Come on. You're used to that?
Yes, come in.
No, but I'm not used to that.
I won't do it again. Come on, sit here. Sit here for a minute, please.
No, I don't want to.
If you do this now, you will embarrass
me.
I know. Fine, never call me again. Sorry, I promise you I won't do anything.
I know, but yes, there was too much.
The guy's coming. I will never do another thing to you. 5 minutes. Don't ruin your friendship with me for 5 minutes.
Weinstein, for his part, denies that he has ever perpetrated a sexual assault. Gia Tolentino joins me to discuss the changing cultural climate and legal procedures surrounding sexual assault. Welcome, Gia.
Thanks for having me.
You write a lot about this subject. What has struck you the most about what you've witnessed with these cases over the past year? And then we'll get to some of the specifics about what we're seeing now.
I think every single one of them, the news breaks, and my first thought is, it's about time. I think what's been telling over the last year is that you hear someone incredibly powerful is being accused of sexual assault a dozen, two dozen times over, and nobody is surprised. It has tapped into the fact that women talk about this as if it's almost a foregone conclusion, that they will have brushed up against this dynamic, if not an escalation of that dynamic into direct violence at some point or another in their lives. And I think that over the last year, women have started coming forward because there is an obvious absolute need to. There's support in the media. It's all of a sudden seeming both infinitely more possible and more necessary to come forward.
And yet you get the sense from the enormous media coverage of this that for many of us there was a shock in hearing in detail the victims' accounts.
Yeah, there's something that's interesting about the Weinstein case because he's famous, because many of the people accusing him are famous, and because the kind of power matrix that governs this whole situation is public. You're able to see these things that are inherent within sexual harassment and assault that don't normally breach the surface when this stuff is reported. The calculations during and after and the long, long aftermath of it. The cover-up is now part of the story with Weinstein because it was so systemic.
And when he went after them, many of them were not well known at all. They were just trying to break into the industry. And of course, that was part of the dynamic, too.
Right. This has also illuminated a part of the dynamic of sexual harassment and assault, that men like Weinstein only do it if you are, as I wrote in something I put up yesterday, if you're inexperienced enough that you'll be penalized if you say no and that you'll be implicated if you say yes. They only do it to women below a certain point in the hierarchy of power, and they're always young.
The other thing that struck me as I was working on this piece, the Ronan Farrow piece for The New Yorker this past week, is the culture of complicity within the company. And one of the women charging Weinstein with sexual assault in the office during the day described the routine quality, saying it felt to her like a streamlined process.
I've been thinking about how the banality of this dynamic is one of the most dangerous elements within it. It's so cliche that it on the surface is almost rendered less appalling. It's so predictable that I think it's easy for, let's say, women placed in the position where they either have to be on the receiving end of sexual predatory behavior or to be asked to enable it. There can be something about it where you can be in a position to think there's got to be something more to this, but often it is exactly that cliche.
It remains unclear exactly who at the Weinstein Company was aware of his actions. Certainly, many employees were not aware. But Ronan Farrow talked to one former executive who said that Weinstein repeatedly asked her to sit in on meetings between him and young women. And this former executive said, it almost felt like the executive or assistant was made to be a honeypot to lure these women in, to make them feel safe. Then he would dismiss the executive or the assistant, and then these women were alone with him.
That part of the story is so tragic. There are benefits to acquiescing to these violent demands, and playing a part in that as an assistant, serving as a sort of barrier and a false expression of safety for women that are going to be preyed upon, that is abusive in its own way. I feel bad for those women for being put in a position where they had to do that or they would certainly be fired. And they were put under NDAs where they can't clarify that mechanism.
Non-disclosure
agreements where they can't clarify that mechanism. I think about how many women, you have stories of Gwyneth Paltrow and Angelina Jolie, all these women that have been in these experiences, walked into a hotel room with Weinstein and walked away. There are so many women who did not walk away because they thought maybe it would lead to something, that it wasn't the cliche they thought it was, that that they were willing to make this really painful moral sacrifice because they were put in an environment of scarcity where women worked at the pleasure of Mr. Weinstein and his female assistants. I feel so sad thinking about how many of them have had to operate under those constraints.
Hi, it's David Remnick. If you're enjoying this podcast, you might enjoy even more of what The New Yorker has to offer. Becoming a subscriber gives you unlimited access to The New Yorker, including Pulitzer Prize-winning reporting, insightful cultural commentary, and fiction and poetry. You'll also enjoy our delightful cartoons, crossword puzzles, narrated stories, and much more. This past year, our readers were gripped by Ronan Farrow's profile of Elon Musk, Heidi Blake's extraordinary tale about Dubai's runaway princesses, and much more. Visit NewYorker.com to gain access to all this and more. Use the code POD15, P-O-D-1-5, to secure a 15% discount on a yearly digital subscription. That's POD15 for a 15% discount.
You recently wrote a piece for the magazine about the lawyer Gloria Allred, whose career has centered for decades on defending women against discrimination, harassment, and assault. Could you describe a little bit of that, your interactions with her, and what that piece showed us?
So Gloria, for decades now, for four decades, she's 76, has been forcefully and unequivocally arguing for the perspective of the victim to be centered and valued both legally and in the court of public opinion. And most people see the latter. I mean, she holds these press conferences where she sits side by side with someone who alleges victimization, and she gets them to tell their point of view of the story. And she does that over and over until that perspective is centered in the news. Over the four decades that she's been doing this, she has been part of the feminist wave that has gotten us to this point where suddenly it's not shameful to speak out about something happening to you, that you can assume a level of support. She represents 33 of the 60 women that have accused Cosby of assault.
60 women.
Nearly 60. I think it's 58 to 60. It kind of depends on how you count. She also represents Summer Zervos in her civil defamation suit against Trump, who accuses him of sexually assaulting her. But Gloria's been doing this for a long time, and she has long been saying, speak up and I'll take your call. And she's been taking a lot of Weinstein calls lately. I talked to her on the phone last night.
One of the things that's difficult in these cases, as you wrote in your piece, is to convict someone of sexual assault. But Allred has succeeded on her own terms in many cases, and she's changed the law.
Yeah, Gloria is very smart on the ways that there are many different ways to make the world more victim-friendly, and there are many different versions of justice for sexual assault. It's very hard to win a criminal verdict against a rapist, to prove a crime that is almost always conducted in private, beyond a reasonable doubt, it's difficult. And so Gloria has lodged a lot of civil lawsuits, won a lot of them. Several of the women she represents who are accusing Bill Cosby of sexual assault have separately, within the states they reside, started advocating with legislators to change the statute of limitations on sexual assault. And Gloria has been helping them make their case.
Which states is that?
It's been extended in Colorado and Nevada. And in California, there's now no statute of limitations for civil cases at all.
You mentioned that you talked to Allred last night. What does she have to say, and specifically about the Harvey Weinstein case?
Well, she picked up the phone and she goes, "Well, Gia, I'm on an hour and a half of sleep. What do you want to know?"
76 years old.
She's 76 years old. She works constantly. She said she described it as a tsunami of calls. She has
been in reaction to Weinstein.
The thing about Gloria Allred is she is the name that many people know to call.
So it sounds like there are going to be many more cases to come.
There are going to be many more cases. Even she, I don't remember exactly how she phrased it, but she was like, you know, this is not going to be over anytime soon.
So let's go back to Lisa Bloom, her daughter, who had been advising Weinstein over the past year on gender and power dynamics. And she initially said, I think it was last week, that Weinstein was guilty not of sexual harassment, but of workplace misconduct. And she resigned the next day.
So it was interesting that one of the only truly unexpected things that came in this whole saga was Lisa Bloom representing Weinstein, because she's made her name as a women's rights attorney, and she won one of the swiftest victories in O'Reilly's ouster.
And she also represents some of the Cosby's accusers.
She also represents Janice Dickinson and a couple of, or at least one other unnamed person. And so, yeah, she came out saying that she had been advising him that he was an old dinosaur learning new ways, which I thought was a little bit unfair to dinosaurs. and then she resigned soon afterwards. And I think we could perhaps infer that she hadn't known about some of the claims of criminal misconduct.
And what did Gloria say about her?
This sort of Ryan Murphy feud, Allred versus Bloom type thing, happened when Variety or someone contacted Gloria, and she said she was not aware that her daughter was representing Weinstein, that she would consider representing an accuser, someone accusing Weinstein, even if it meant that her daughter was opposing counsel. And Bloom said in response, "I would not do that. Family comes first." You know, it was a sharp shot from both of them. And the thing is, you know, it is different. Allred Mroko and Goldberg is a, you know, they are civil attorneys, they're plaintiff's attorneys. Bloom's law firm is a general practice. They represent a lot of people. They don't only represent victims. Bloom did accurately point out that the nature of their work is different, but it was a very strong implicit rebuke that I think highlighted the fact that it seems like there are very clear sides here.
We've now seen the role that the press can play in cases like this. I mean, the reaction was very swift, and the story is still unfolding, and it will continue to. What role do you think humor plays? This was an open secret in Hollywood for decades. Jokes have been made publicly. I think Seth MacFarlane made one at the 2013 Oscars. Jokes have been made on 30 Rock, Arrested Development.
Oh, please. I'm not afraid of anyone in show business. I turned down intercourse with Harvey Weinstein on no less than 3 occasions out of 5.
I'm telling you.
Is it funny?
To me, it's, you know, who's the joke on? Is it on the victim or is it on the rapist? So Seth MacFarlane's joke at the Oscars was like, you know, now was women nominated for a category, and he was like, now you 5 don't have to pretend to be attracted to Harvey Weinstein anymore. That I didn't think was funny because it places the joke on them,
yes,
not Weinstein. The joke on 30 Rock, the person it makes look pathetic is Weinstein. There's no categorical answer one way or another, but you can kind of tell where people's sympathies lie instinctively in the way they make these jokes. The reason that these jokes exist is because, as has figured heavily in the story, Weinstein is quick to threaten litigation. And most people who know are operating under non-disclosure agreements.
This is why it's been so difficult to do thorough reporting on this subject, because you have to have, you know, a mighty institution behind you.
Right.
And it takes months and months and months. Ronan Farrow's piece was a 10-month investigation.
Right. And it also sort of takes a village of women. It takes multiple women being ready to put themselves at serious risk. And that's what this year has changed. I mean, people have been chasing the story for decades. And it's only now that I think you have multiple people ready to risk a lawsuit from Weinstein. And so the jokes, they are ways of breaching this information into the public consciousness in a way that will not make you legally liable. They're sort of trial balloons. They're sort of little flares of this information, you know, that can't be litigated.
I want to just end by going back to Trump, who was elected, as we all know, despite the many, many predictions that the Access Hollywood video was going to be the end of his candidacy. But since then, we've seen the Women's March and all of the kinds of pressure that we've been talking about here. Do you think that this does represent a substantive long-term change and we're going to be seeing much more of this kind of thing?
You know, it depends, right? Because Trump has 24, I think it's almost two dozen women who have gone, who have accused him of sexual misconduct, and he was elected president, right? So the sea change is not going to be, you know, the centuries-long power hierarchy will be, gendered power hierarchy will be upended. But we are seeing a spike. I think part of the reason people are speaking up so forcefully now is they realize, women realize that if they don't, it'll be possible for people like Trump to get elected. It's so urgent now to foreground, like, you know, you didn't understand what it meant to have a man elected that has 24 women accusing him of sexual misconduct.
And where is Gloria Allred now on the cases against Trump that she's representing?
So they're arguing, Mark Kasowitz is arguing for presidential immunity for Trump, and Allred is arguing against it. The brief she filed in September, there's a little bit of her dry humor in it. It's like, you know, it's true that his office is very important, but us suing him will not interfere with his important duties. She's saying that he doesn't have immunity from a lawsuit in state court, that behavior conducted outside the office of the president does not have the immunity of the office of the president.
Okay, to be continued. Thanks, Gia, so much.
Thank you.
Gia Tolentino is a New Yorker staff writer and a frequent contributor to NewYorker.com. This has been The Political Scene from The New Yorker. You can subscribe to this and other New Yorker podcasts by searching for The New Yorker in your podcast app and find more political analysis and commentary on NewYorker.com. Feel free to rate and review The Political Scene on Apple Podcasts. This podcast is produced by Alex Barron for NewYorker.com with help from Hannibal Lentz. I'm Dorothy Wickenden.